Established in 1959, they are a family-owned grocer located on Old Redwood Highway in the Larkfield Center. Their website is MulsberryMarket.com. Mulsberry's Market tunes in to the Roots of Rock every Sunday morning at 7 on Cowes Community Radio.
Cowes thanks North Coast Solar for their ongoing support. They've been supplying residential and commercial businesses with solar power since 1984. Their website, ncsr.com, contains information about how to improve energy reliability. They can be reached at 707-575-3999. North Coast Solar is proud to sponsor Uncle Charlie's Jukebox here on Cowes every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific.
And there you have it. Thanks to all of underwriters. Obviously, we need everyone to keep Cowes Community Radio going. We are a community radio station based out of Occidental, California. Again, I am Colin Mutchler, and this is Remembering Ourselves. I started back in November. This is our 10th show where I ask the guests to bring some songs from their early life, some songs from their coming of age period, and some songs from now. And I'm really happy to have with me today Manjula Martin, who I know a little bit. I feel like you know my wife Christy more than I do, but she's an author, has written several books, the most recent of which, The Last Fire Season. I'm about a third of the way through. And it's a really amazing personal story, and I think what I was, you know, most struck by so far is just like the integration and weaving of the personal story with the relationship to the land, and the fact that it is this place that we live in West County is uniquely powerful for me personally. But welcome to the show, Manjula.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you, and thanks so much for doing this. I know it's, I've been like looking for people that I have relationships with or friends of friends around West County, and I love and respect your work, and it's always interesting to see what's, you know, how they react to the question of, you know, looking back in your life for, you know, the music that you have relationship with. What was it like to think about that?
It was difficult to choose songs, but it was actually really interesting because I think the way this came about was your wife had read my book, and there's a lot of music in the book. It's a memoir, so I had the freedom to sort of like set the mood by using music, which I did because music is a really big part of my life, even though it doesn't technically relate to the main subjects of the book. And so revisiting that idea with your show and having to choose different songs from different periods, it was really hard to choose. I used to work at record stores, and I've been really into music for a really long time, so it was painful.
Right, you have so much, like you could choose anything.
Yeah, really, and I had to, like, yeah, you know, there are certain albums that and songs that I consider as being, like, 100% me, but what I realized is, A, there are a lot of them, and B, I think as I was like looking back and looking through my records, I mostly listened to vinyl, so I was physically looking through records to choose.
A true music head.
Yeah. Very Gen X. but I realized how much, like, of the music that I listened to at these pivotal times in my life was literally handed to me by people in my life. Like the influence of other people and other people's knowledge and taste is so strong. And so that was kind of the way I ended up choosing, was like by different influence.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. And so I'm trying to remember from reading the book, I remember you grew up mostly in Santa Cruz area. Is that right?
Yeah. I grew up in Santa Cruz. And which, you know, has some similar vibes as Sonoma County, especially in the West. And I moved around a lot in my 20s. So I lived on the East Coast. I traveled internationally a bit, lived in Portland, Oregon, and then ended up back in the Bay in 2003.
But that's cool how you thought about what are people actually giving you music. I think it's something that people probably who are younger, but you know, a few generations below us that like can't relate to at all. I think there's something so it's hard to explain, but at that time people handing you a mixtape or people thinking of you and being like, you would really like this artist or this musician, and literally handing you a physical object.
Yeah.
It happened a lot, right?
A lot. I mean, that's the primary way I sort of have been turned on to music and books throughout my life. And I have to admit, as a person of a certain age, I'm in my late 40s, like since things became digital and non-physical objects with music, it's been harder for me to discover new music. And part of that is just because like I'm an old person now and I like the music I liked when I was in my 20s. But also I haven't figured out a way to, yeah, there isn't that equivalent of like someone putting something in your hand and being like, you have to listen to this.
Yeah. And there's something about physical objects that stay with you. Like the thing I've been thinking about in it's not music related, but it's a similar challenge with the photographs and the memories of your life, where it used to be like there was physical photographs and there was like an album that your mom or somebody would make. And now they're like in the cloud somewhere. And it's like you have to think of them in order to retrieve them. It's not like they're not just in your house. You just walk past and like, oh, yeah, that's right. I like that song.
Yeah. And the volume is so much more vast. I think that's always a struggle, right? To like narrow things down, and especially in the digital realm. Actually, we have at my house, my partner and I have one really long shelf that is the record shelf, and we have a one in, one out rule because there's no more room on the shelf. And so having like a finite amount of that cultural artifact is, I think, really challenging, but also really cool because it actually makes you sort of engage with the things in a more active way. And you're like, do I actually listen to this? Is it a sentimental object? That's okay too. But like, what role does it play? You know,
that's really cool. Yeah. Huh. I like that idea. I feel like we need to force that in our lives in various forms.
I mean, it's just the fact that we don't have any storage space in our house, but
I know. Yeah. Our house is very tiny. Yeah. Well, let's start in the early days. Like, paint the picture for me around those first few songs that you chose and why you chose them. Like, you know, I assume you're in those era somewhere in Santa Cruz, either.
Yeah.
And are you an only child, or how many are you?
I have an older brother. Okay. I have three parents. My parents divorced when I was like three, and I have a stepmom. So I grew up spending time between two different houses, but both in the same town, along with my brother. And, you know, it was the 80s. and so I think, you know, in terms of influence, the songs I chose for this early part of my life are When Will I Be Loved by Linda Ronstadt and Cheek to Cheek by Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong from the album Ella and Louis. Both like huge faves of mine as a child. And I would say that each of those influences came from my parents. Like Linda Ronstadt definitely came from my mom, who was a singer and used to like sing songs to me. I have some very vivid memories of learning how to roller skate on our carport. We had like a, you know, carport, but we also had a gravel driveway. And so it was always filled with gravel and going awesome. Around and around in a tiny circle. And my mom like singing me songs. I don't know why I wasn't listening to it. Tape deck or something, but
that's cool.
So the Linda Ronstadt is from that, and Ella and Louis is generally from my dad. I got a love of jazz from a very young age, starting out with jazz vocals, like this kind of thing, and then moving into like, you know, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, all that.
So good. Yeah, I didn't get jazz till much later. That's really cool. You got it early.
Yeah, I was lucky.
Well, let's listen to a pieces of those songs, and then we'll come back in. So the first one, I'll play the beginning of When Will I Be Loved, Linda Ronstadt.
It happens every day.
That is Linda Ronstadt, When Will I Be Loved? A great song. And it turns out a local San Franciscan who may or may not have dated Jerry Brown at some point.
Not that matters, but yes.
The next one I'm going to play is a piece of Cheek to Cheek, which is Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong.
I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak. And I seem to find the happiness I seek. When we out together, dancing cheek to cheek. Take it, Ella, swing it.
So that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together, dancing cheek to cheek. Heaven, I'm in heaven.
Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong, Cheek to Cheek. Manjula, as we were listening, was talking about a film that this is part of. I feel like you have so many, I feel like what I love about so far our conversation and learning about you is like the music that you brought and the music in your life is like intertwined with all the other things that you've consumed, whether it's film or books. And but what were you saying about this one?
So this song also is featured in an old Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movie. I think it's Top Hat, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be wrong about that. They're all sort of blend together. And I was a really big classic film nerd, still am. Like anything black and white, I would watch it on VHS when I was a kid, or now, you know, I have the Criterion Channel subscription.
Nice.
Yeah, and so this was a favorite song from that film that Fred and Ginger danced to. And, you know, Ginger Rogers was famously the person that they said about, you know, she did everything Fred Astaire did, but backwards in high heels. So I was always into that when I was a kid. I thought that was cool. And then later I heard the Ella and Louis version. And was like, oh, this is much better.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up the bonus track you shared. Even though I asked for two, you were like, Romeo had Juliet, Lou Reed. Tell me the backstory on your relationship to Lou Reed.
Oh, man. Lou Reed is definitely an influence of my father's, who, in addition to jazz, really liked classic rock. And my dad doesn't like to, like, talk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of driving when you're a kid, you know, you're getting driven around a lot. And I just have a lot of memories of being in my dad's car, a VW Squareback in Santa Cruz, and listening to his tapes, which were either jazz or classic rock. And so Lou Reed came around at that time. He released that album, New York. I think it was in the late 80s. I'm not sure what year. And it blew my freaking mind. Like, I was like, what is this? And that was sort of my gateway into getting into, I actually got into solo Lou Reed first and then figured out that the Velvet Underground happened.
Right.
And got really into that. And one of the main sort of rock and roll influences in my life. And also a big influence on like the way I thought about and imagined New York to be. I later moved to New York and ended up living in New York City for a while.
He was the first person that kind of painted the imagination of New York. Or
yeah, which I feel like is 100% accurate in this case. And so, yeah, like, you know, Lou Reed in New York are like, you know, indistinguishable.
I wanted to, because I didn't actually know the song that you picked, and I'm just going to play a piece of it, because I think I've been told at various points, there's at times when I did more like spoken wordy poetry and stuff, and there's like songs, and they're like, yeah, you kind of sound like Lou Reed. And I didn't know, I didn't have a deep relationship with Lou Reed, but
he's talky.
Yeah, let's just play a piece of it so people can get a sense of it.
twisted stars, the plotted lines, the faulty map that brought Columbus to New York. Betwixt between the east and west, he calls on her wearing a leather vest. The earth squeals and shudders to a halt. A diamond crucifix in his ear is used to help ward off the fear that he has left his soul in someone's rented car. Inside his pants he hides a mop to clean the mess that he has dropped into the life of lightsome Juliet Bell. And Romeo wanted Juliet, and Juliet wanted Romeo. And Romeo wanted Juliet, and Juliet wanted Romeo.
Romeo Rodriguez. Lou Reed. Yeah, I like the style. It's a cool style. It's like,
yeah,
it's not totally poetry. It's something different than like Bob Dylan and those various, like, that kind of genre, but it's definitely not like hip hop either. It's like,
it's just very Lou Reed. He was singular. And like looking back at how like weird the Velvet Underground was for its time, like, mm-hmm. Velvet Underground was like when early 60s, maybe it's older than you think it is.
Yeah.
Those albums. Huh. But I just love the idea of like transposing Romeo and Juliet into the Bronx and like the New York thing, and like Lou Reed going New York is just York. Imprinted on my memory forever.
And so wait, so when was this, like, where were you at in your life when you first heard Lou Reed? Were you like in high school? Were you post high school?
I must have been in high school. I feel like I need to Google what year that album came out, because I don't quite recall.
Right,
but
right.
I think it was the late 80s, so mm-hmm. I would have been in junior high.
Okay.
Or maybe even younger.
And when did you like leave Santa Cruz, or were you in Santa Cruz for university too? Or
no, I left after high school.
Okay.
And I went to college as far away as I could on the East Coast. And after a year, I dropped out and moved to New York, which was probably Lou Reed's fault.
You did the proper education of the New York City streets.
Yeah. And I actually ended up working. I worked as a journalist and in magazines for a while in New York. And then I took a break and worked at a nightclub called The Knitting Factory.
Oh, yeah. I know The Knitting Factory.
It's like the downtown scene.
I remember that. I went to that place.
Yeah. So I was the box office girl, and I used to just sit in the box office, and it was the 90s, so I would smoke cigarettes in the box office at work all day.
Totally.
And I had the job of, like, you know, letting people in who are on the list and stuff. And I actually, Lou Reed and Laurie Anderson used to come to shows there, and it was just,
wow,
amazing. I would just stare at them from afar. I wouldn't actually try to talk to them.
Yeah, I remember, because my New York era, I grew up in New Jersey. But I was like, you know, that was New Jersey. It was not New York. We like went in a few times, but I didn't really know New York. Bridge and Tunnel. Yeah, exactly. And until I was like late high school, I wasn't even interested. Christy, my now wife, she was like cooler than I was. She was actually interested. You know, she like knew a little scene. She would go in sometimes.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I came back from, I went to college in North Carolina, then came back. And then after college, we moved to Fort Greene, Brooklyn. We were there for about 7 years. And then I felt like I actually got to know New York City. But yeah, at that time, I was like, that first year or two, when I was like fascinated. And that was when I did a little bit of music myself at that time. And I was trying to, like, you know, get to know that scene. And that's when I remember, I feel like the Knitting Factory was one of those venues that was like, oh man, that would be cool to play at the Knitting Factory.
It was very cool. It was also when there was like a avant-garde, like, klezmer jazz scene happening. Like John Zorn would be the most famous artist from that world, and I actually didn't like that music at that time, and then much later I came to like it, and then regretted not liking it then. But yeah, I mean, we had, my boyfriend and a friend and I had a little band, and we used to like practice in a basement space on Ludlow Street and imagine that we could be rock stars, and we never played a gig, but it was really fun.
I love it. Oh yeah. My god. Well, I'm curious, so that's, and then was that the area of you working at record stores, or no? Or is that a different era?
I actually worked in record stores. So New York was like, I moved to New York when I was 19.
Okay.
And I had worked at record stores starting in high school. My first legal job, I should say, I worked at, my family had a retail store, so I worked there as a kid, mm-hmm. which technically I think was illegal. I used to work at a used books and records store in downtown Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue that was called Logos Books and Records. And it was a huge store full of books and records. And I got a job there as a high school student, which was kind of unusual. I had the best job ever, which was, my only job was to shelve mass market paperback books. And that was it.
I'd
come and I would get my cart.
Wow.
And I would go downstairs, which is where all the paperbacks were, and just like shelf and just alphabetize.
Amazing.
And I usually did it at night for a couple hours a night. And it was kind of a magical time. And as a result, I met a lot of really cool people who worked at the record store and worked at the bookstore. And a lot of them had radio shows, actually, on the local station at that time, KUSP, which is now gone. But, you know, so I had these sort of like, I mean, they must have been in their 30s, but I thought they were very old. Like dude, record store dudes, like handing me things, you know, like I'd come and in my little hold box cubby hole, there would just be like a record with a post-it note on it that said like, check this out or whatever. And that was a lot of my musical influence, in my teen years. Yeah. So,
talking about bookstores and record stores and like from our previous conversation, I do feel like it's something that's so needed right now. It's like there's obviously bookstores have not gone away. Like they're struggling more than they have been in the past, but they're around for a reason. You know, people do like going to bookstores and I think record stores, even though there's not as many of them, I know that there's one in Santa Rosa.
It
was going to be the last, then it became the next.
It was the last for many, many years. And then, it became the next.
Right. Yeah. But I also feel like there's that thing that does what you're describing of people who you have relationships with, friends or friends of friends who like know you enough to be able to recommend something to you,
right? Yeah.
Is the thing that in person is the thing that we don't have as much of. Like the thing that I've been craving since living here, actually, like in West County, is like the equivalent of the places that you run into people. I mean, Christy goes to like the Altamont sometimes just because you run into people there, or
I sometimes co-work with her at the Altamont.
Right. And that's like the closest. I feel like sometimes you run into people at, you know, some random bar or restaurant, but I do feel like there's something different about like a bookstore, record store kind of place where it's like you're not there to hang out. You're there to like explore things culturally. And I sometimes wish that there could continue to be those places in some that include some of the new media in some way. I don't know if it's possible, but I feel like we have all this new media that we're consuming, all this digital stuff, but we don't really talk about it in real life enough.
Yeah. What they call the third place, right? Not home, not work,
right,
but another place.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that does exist, but I think maybe it looks different.
Yeah.
And I do feel like a lot of it is not a physical in-person existence. Like there are a lot of third places online that people find great value in.
Totally.
That connect people in ways that didn't used to. But that in-person thing, I think we're lacking it. But I also think like maybe since the pandemic or just, you know, since we've come to an understanding of, you know, tech companies being owned by evil overlords, you know, I think people are craving that more. It just feels like more people are looking for that.
It'll emerge. Well, if you're just joining us, I'm Colin Mutzer. This is Remembering Ourselves. And we are here with Manjula Martin, who's sharing about the music from various parts of her life. We are kind of like, and now entering the songs that you chose that are kind of like your coming of age. Like, I mean, it sounds like you kind of got cool music earlier than most, but these next wave of songs that you chose, what era do they come from? Is that the New York era or?
These actually come, the songs I chose for this are the song Get Yourself Another Fool by Sam Cooke, which comes from the high school Logos, Books and Records era, definitely, which was when I got really into soul music, and specifically 60s soul music. And then a Patti Smith song, Because the Night, from her album Easter.
Which I'm embarrassed to say I didn't know that was her song. Like, I love that song from the 10,000 Maniacs version, I did not know that was her song.
That's actually something that I thought about when I was choosing this, is I was like, oh, I am of the age where like the first version of the song I heard was 10,000 Maniacs, and it's a great cover.
Totally.
But it did take me half a minute before I then heard Patti Smith's, you know, album of it. And I realized it was co-written by Bruce Springsteen, who co-wrote a lot of great songs, including Downtown Train by Tom Waits. And there was another one. Oh, Meet Me Tonight in Atlantic City is a Bruce song, which was Levon Helm.
One of my former guests, who's a Villa granddad, turned out he named his son Bruce from Bruce Springsteen.
Totally legit choice. He really is the best. So these songs, so Patti Smith was more from the New York era. And I will just say that like the reason I chose these two songs specifically were because they were both songs that I was influenced to check out through books. Like part of working in a bookstore and working in record stores, both as a teen and then later, was that I read books about music. And so there were two books that were really influential on me in sort of like, I would say the late 90s, like teen to 20s years. and both of those led to obsessions. So the Sam Cooke song came from...
Since you're not in the studio, we can see the actual physical books are here. They look very cool and very used.
And very heavy. They're big books. So Sweet Soul Music by the music journalist Peter Guralnick, who I think also wrote a bio of Elvis. He's written a bunch of books. And that book just goes deep into the 60s soul movement, like Muscle Shoals, Motown, all that stuff. And it just blew my mind open, and I would like go find every album that is talked about and listen to it. And that was how I discovered Sam Cooke. I mean, I'd heard some of Sam Cooke's songs as a child because they're kind of classics, you know, but I didn't really understand him as like an artistic presence and as a political presence until I read that book.
That's so cool. Yeah, reading about music, like, it's funny, somehow it's what's coming up for me is, like, the cheapening, like, when it's just about the sound, like, I'm thinking of these weird AI things that make songs, like, it's so not interesting to me. It's like the opposite of reading a book about music and then listening to songs. Like, you read about the history of the people and how they came together and how the kind of movement of music evolved in a certain historical moment, and then you hear the songs, and it carries all that meaning with it. And it's like you feel very grounded in that song or that artist. Whereas, like, if you just, it's not, music is not just about sound. I guess my point is,
no,
like,
not at
it's
all.
About the deeper reason for why that song exists or what that person was trying to communicate with their life and their words in that moment.
It is a kind of communication, and I think particularly before the advent of recording, it really was a kind of communication, like we were talking about during the break a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for me, music is also history. Like, you can learn a lot about history by looking at what was going on in culture in particular times. You know, soul music was largely a black art that then sort of became commercialized, and a lot of white people made more money off of it than black artists. And it was very much a product of this very fraught era, the 50s and 60s. And I learned a lot of that from Sam Cooke.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, let's hear the Sam Cooke song. It's called Get Yourself Another Fool.
Also a great breakup song.
Another breakup song. Oh, the breakup songs.
Another fool. You said that you love me. I was yours to command, but your kind of love, my heart couldn't stand. Get yourself another fool. And now that we're through, you say you're meant to be. I love you.
was Get Yourself Another Fool from Sam Cooke. And then next, the original of the song that many people in my generation will have heard from 10,000 Maniacs, but the original is Patti Smith, Because the Night. Night, Patti Smith, a classic. And I'm gonna do, yeah, I know, that's true, you can't fade it out. I should have just played the whole song, but it's a great song. And then I wanted to play the bonus track for this phase of Manjula's life, which is Ready or Not from the Fugees. Lauryn Hill, Wyclef.
Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slowly. Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you and make you want me.
Now that I escape, sleep, walk away. Yeah. Those who come late know the world they kick. Jail bars ain't golden gates. Those who fake, they break. When they meet their 400-pound mate, if I could rule the world, everyone would have a gun in the ghetto, of course. When get the up and on their horse. Kick around, drinking moonshine. I pour a sip on the concrete for the deceased, but no, don't weep. White Clef's in a state of sleep, thinking about the robbery that I did last week. Money in the bag, banker look like a drag. I wanna play with pelicans from here to Baghdad. Gun blast, think fast, I think I'm hit. My girl pinched my hips to see if I still exist. I think not, I'll send a letter to my friends. A born again hooligan, only to be king again.
Ready or not, here I come, you can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slowly.
So 1996, we found out, yeah. The Fugees. I remember when that album came out. That was like a major, major, you know, that
huge
hit the scene.
Cultural moment. That was also the year I moved to New York. So it was like the sound of the summer. 1996 was that and No Diggity, I think.
Yeah, right.
But I love the Fugees. Lauryn Hill is one of the greats. And this that album actually came to me from working at a record store. And we got like a used CD in of it. And I think it... like didn't have liner notes or something. It was like just the cover or something. And I saw it and I had no idea what it was. And I was like, those people look really cool. Because it has that picture of the three of them on the cover.
Right.
And I like slipped it in. My best friend also worked at the store. And she's the person who I moved to New York with. And I slipped it into her like hold box with a post-it that just said, these people look really cool. Good? Question mark. And then when we moved to New York, that was the soundtrack of that road trip, was Fugees.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. And what about, tell me about the, is there any other story about like Because the Night and Patti Smith? Any other reason why you chose that song?
Oh, yeah. Well, Patti Smith is just, you know, the empress of rock and roll and poetry and photography. She's amazing. But another book that really influenced me musically was a book called Please Kill Me, An Uncensored Oral History of Punk. It came out in the late 90s during the time that I was living in New York. And Patti Smith's in it a bit. It's like, you know, all the New York punk stuff is in it. And that really influenced me. Honestly, I don't think I've read it since then.
Right, so but you read it at that time. Up.
Yeah. But that kind of set me off. I had exposure to punk in like a California, like skate punk kind of way, because I grew up in Santa Cruz, like Dead Kennedys or like Descendants, you know, stuff like that more. But that really set me off on New York punk, which remains one of my favorite musical genres.
Yeah, I was like, I'm a fan of it, but I wasn't exposed to it that much. Like, and then there's actually one of my other guests that came on, this guy Corbett, who's has like a folk punk kind of kids band that he's dad in Monterio now. His band is called, oh my God, I can't believe I'm blanking. I'll get it in a second.
I feel like there should be a band called Monterio Dads.
True. Well,
get going, Colin.
Well, his wife, who is the music teacher at the school, Rio Fest, which is in like mid June. There's going to be one called the Monterio Kids Orchestra, maybe, or something like that. That will happen. It's close. Yeah, me and some dads played as Papa Dulce.
That's right.
Papa Dulce and the Combos. That's our close. But I think Monterio Dads is more clear and direct. I like it. but he was involved in the punk scene here in the Bay when he was younger. And there's a movie that's coming out actually this weekend called like Freaky Friday or something. It's supposed to be really weird, but also really about that. It's like it's a fictional film, but it's like based in that time of like the Bay Area punk days or something that I'm kind of curious to check out. How long were you in New York for? Like, when did that era end?
You know, I'm realizing now that this list is like heavily New York influenced.
I mean,
only lived
as
in
it
New
should
York
be.
For 4 years.
No way.
But at the time it seemed like a lot. It was, you know, as I said, I dropped out of college and moved there. And so there were very,
that's your coming of age
years.
Moment. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, that was a huge
from Santa Cruz to New York City. I mean, that's a major situation.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, for me too. I mean, because even though I lived in New Jersey, yeah, for me also, when I moved to New York, I mean, it was major. For me, I didn't really grow up with hip hop. So for me, I lived in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, and I fell in love with like Talib Kweli and Mos Def and Black Star. And
they lived there at that time.
Yeah, that was like, I was just, but I, you know, and I had never really lived around black people, and that was like, I was in a black community, and it was just like a cultural education for me just to be there.
Totally.
You know, in all of its ways in New York City. So I can see why, you know, if you're not don't live in a city and you move to a city like that, it's a major deal.
It was a big deal. And you know, looms large in our cultural imagination for a reason, I guess, even though it's kind of a cliche, it is real. Yeah.
And then where did you go after New York?
After New York, I went back to Santa Cruz. I mean, I went back to Santa Cruz probably like 3 or 4 times in my 20s for like 2 to 6 months.
Right.
As people do. And then I ended up living, a friend of mine was like, I'm moving to Portland, Oregon. I hear there's lots of music there. Want to come? I have an empty room in my house. And I was like, okay. I'd never been to Portland, or I'd been once on a road trip, like for 1 day. And I literally got on a Greyhound bus with a duffel bag and ended up in Portland, where I got a job at a record store.
Amazing. Yeah. I had no idea that you had so much music in your journey.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting. I think of myself so much as like a writer, and
totally.
That's obviously what I do now most prominently, but music was a big deal. I always joke that I became a writer because I wasn't good enough at guitar.
Right. Well, I mean, I think one other thing I think about these days with all the weirdness of what's happening with technology is like how the forms are all kind of converging, you know, like, you had to choose, like, you either, musician puts out albums, you know, a writer puts out books, you know, and nowadays, and a journalist, you know,
does one kind of thing,
and a, you know, an entertainer does something else. And now it's like, everything's kind of intertwined, and everybody's like, just talking and writing, and taking pictures and putting videos out on the internet. You know, it's like, it's sort of weird. I sometimes think that there's going to be some, like, the next big cultural breakthrough will be like some 15-year-old who does like something super weird that's all the genres or all the mediums. You know, it's not, they're a musician that actually creates films.
I'm sure that exists. I'm sure there's 15-year-olds doing that right now. You know, there must be. I kind of like that about our new era, because I'm a person who has many different interests, and I've always felt like, because I do creative things professionally, I've always felt like I was sort of being urged to only do one, even with writing. Like, you know, this book is a memoir and a natural history book.
But that's true. You kind of merged a bunch of genres into one.
And then my next book is going to be a novel. So I like to...
Cool.
You know, I like many different genres of things, and I actually like how those all get intertwined in some ways.
That's cool. I didn't know that about you, but I deeply appreciate it. And I feel like I'm similar in some respects. Like I hate having to say, but what are you? You
know, yeah, totally.
But what are you? No, but what do you do? Like, be really clear about it, because I don't understand. You know, it's like hard to explain.
I'm a
human being human and processing the world and trying to share about it.
Well, we live in an age of like fake expertise, right? Like everyone has to be an expert in something. And I actually like being a generalist and think that that's very valuable as well. That's also like a big trick that the tech industry has pulled, is like pushing a lot of labor onto citizens, of like making videos and stuff like that. Like, things that used to be someone's job are now like people do for fun, for free, for the tech companies, like, you know, all
totally.
Of Instagram or whatever.
Yeah, everybody's a producer of content for free. Nobody's getting paid, but we're all doing it. Good times.
Yeah.
Well, if you're just visiting, this is Remembering Ourselves. I'm Colin Mutchler. I'm here today with author and all around human creative person, Manjula Martin. On each show, I ask people to bring songs from their early life, songs from their coming of age when they first started to choose their own music and be into music themselves, and songs from this current period, which, you know, I think for you, I said since the pandemic as kind of the now-ish period. What was it like to think about that time? I know my memory from you reading your book was that was a very meaningful period in your life. You were going through health stuff. You were moving. You ended up moving up here.
We had been living part time in Sonoma County, and part time in San Francisco, and then sort of coincidentally, when we lost our apartment, it was, you know, early 2020. And so ended up moving here during the lockdown era of the pandemic. And that's largely when the book takes place. It's you know, on the surface, it's a memoir of that year, although it goes deeper into the past and the future in some ways. And so it was interesting to think about that in terms of music. Like, what am I listening to since 2020? That seems really not that long ago.
Totally.
And also being like an old now, I'm not really listening. I don't really know that much about contemporary music, and it's totally mortifying. And I feel bad saying that, because I would like to know more about contemporary music, but that's just where we're at, I guess. And so I was trying to like really think about, what do I listen to right now? And I think, you know, there's actually a scene in my book where my partner and I are stuck inside because of the smoke from wildfires, which everyone...
Yeah, I remember this period. I've read that part.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so we end up like re-alphabetizing our records and just going into this deep spiral of the past, similar to this radio show, like thinking about, you know, different eras of our lives and different music. And we end up like having a dance party to Toots and the Maytals. For me, in the pandemic, like, I got really into reggae, weirdly. I had been really into reggae in like junior high, because I grew up in Santa Cruz, and you're legally obligated to be into reggae if you grew up in Santa Cruz. You know, and at the time I had no idea about, no context for that. Like, that was just like the music we all liked. And then I forswore it when I became a cool New York punk rocker. I was like, that's not cool. That's for hippies.
Totally.
And then I got back into it around 2020. And I think part of it was that we were looking for like a chill, you know, my partner and I had more moments where we needed to just chill out and like not stress out.
That's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah. I think that's how we use music to like, you know, to kind of guide us emotionally, I think, is something that I do more of now than I did before, because there's infinite choice. So I'm like, how do I want to feel right now?
Yeah. And you can get very specific, you know,
totally.
And the algorithm can never really nail it, even though it tries.
Yeah. It's better when you choose your own stuff. You can get it right. Yeah. All right. Well, let's listen to that and the other song you chose now, and then we'll come back together. So this first one is called Time Tough by Toots and the Maytals.
Uh-huh. sleep won't come. Get up in the night. I couldn't stand my feelings. No. Early in the morning. Oh, mercy. It's just the same situation. And I'm mad. Taking the landlord. Yeah. Just a knocking knock on my door. Knocking up on my door. And I've got 400 months left to pay, and I can't find a dollar. Let me tell you, time talk. Everything is on the side. It's so hard. Time talk. Everything is going higher and higher. The leak and all is standing there. They're crying out on there. Lord, nobody to help them in their way. I've got 400 more rent to pay, and I can't find a dollar. Let me tell the time comes. Everything is out of sight. It's so hard. Time hard.
That's Time Tough from Toots and the Maytals. And the next one is Not Strong Enough by Boy Genius, Julian Baker, and Phoebe Bridges. Was Not Strong Enough, Boy Genius, Julian Baker, and Phoebe Bridges. I'm Colin Mutzler. This is Remembering Ourselves. I'm here with Manjula Martin. And this is these were two songs that Manjula chose to represent this current period since the pandemic. We heard about that first song, but maybe tell us about why you chose Not Strong Enough to represent the your relationship to music these days.
Yeah, well, as an old, I don't know a lot of contemporary bands anymore. and I'm not sort of like up on what the kids are listening to, but I don't even remember how I heard Boy Genius. I probably heard Phoebe Bridgers first, like most people. Yeah, I got really into the single Kyoto off of one of her albums that came out during the pandemic, actually. And then I sort of got the Boy Genius album when it came out, the new one. And this is just one of those songs that, like, you can put it on and dance around and sing along. You can be driving in the car and life becomes a music video as soon as you put it on. And it's good. They're really good.
Yeah.
All the boys are great.
That's cool. Yeah. We were talking when we were listening offline about how these days more than before, you know, yeah, that's what you just said about your being a music video, like, resonates for me. Like, there's so much more. I feel like a lot of the music that's out right now or that you have access to, it feels like a soundtrack more. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, because people have headphones on, maybe it's like that. Yeah. When you actually walk around the world with headphones on, you literally are in a movie.
Yeah.
Where you have the soundtrack on as if your life is the is what the music is playing for. Versus, I think, when you were standing around a record player in 1956 or whatever, just, you know, singing together, you know, didn't feel like you were in a movie. It felt like you were just standing with friends.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it did. I could ask my mom. Like,
probably when you were driving, it was the most similar. Because I do think,
or, you know, all those girls fainting when the Beatles went on
true.
Stage.
That is
like,
true.
That's kind of cinematic.
That is true. Oh my God.
I don't know.
But I wanted to ask.
I would probably faint if I saw Boy Genius close up.
So. You probably would.
Yeah, probably.
All right, that's good. Yeah, I have a weird. My when I was like 8, I wrote my first like little book that I drew has like weirdly fainting's a huge part of it. My kids always laugh because they're like, and then you fainted. It's like, is it probably, I saw something with fainting and I thought it was really cool. But I've never fainted.
It is. There's a romance to it, you know?
But what's going on right now so you basically finished the tour of The Last Five Seasons, or are you continuing to, are you kind of like done with that journey? Like, you'll keep doing stuff, but it's not like in the intense period.
You know, I thought I was done with that journey. The book came out January of 2024, and
okay.
I did a lot of events, and I've just been like heavy promoting the book as much as possible, all year really. I just was a finalist for a fancy award. Then I got to go to New York, and that
cool.
was really cool and fun. And I was like, okay, there's that chapter over. And then I remember that the paperback is coming out in May.
Oh, yeah. I saw that on your website when I was just looking at it. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So, and then I think there was a convergence of, like, partially because the book got nominated for a prestigious award and partially because of the LA fires.
Yeah.
There's been a renewed interest in it. And so I'm actually, like, doing a lot of traveling and events this spring and summer for the book. But after that, I'm going to take a hiatus from events and work on my new book.
And do you want to talk about it on air or no?
No, it's a novel.
Cool. I mean, yeah, that's enough. I mean, that's exciting
that's
in its own way. You said earlier, like, how you're kind of like, you wrote a nonfiction memoir / history / yeah, now you're going into like a novel.
Why
I love
not?
It. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, but it is reality. I mean, it's, and you said it in your book too. I mean, just the reality of our relationship to fire is not going away. It's always been here, always will be here, and hopefully it'll improve. It does in our little town, in our little, you know, little slice of area that I feel part of out in West County. It does feel like, you know, over the last like 10 or 15 years, it's like baby steps improving. Like, there's like more discussions, there's more controlled burns, there's more like
absolutely.
There's more relationship with some of the indigenous wisdom that has more of a deep relationship to this place. It seems like it's slow, but it's like moving in the right direction.
I agree. I think there's a lot more common knowledge about, you know, the history of indigenous fire and how that relates to the ecosystems here and why we're having worse fires now. And I mean, like, I think I moved to Sonoma County in 2017, and I never heard anything about, like, prescribed burning, for example.
No, never,
And now, you know, we just had prescribed burn up the hill from our house. Like, we are making some slow progress. I think I worry that in Sonoma County, you know, we've gotten a little complacent because we haven't luckily had a bad fire in the last 5 years. The joke is that my book title was accurate.
Oh, right, we haven't. It's like the last fire.
For now. And I worry that people are kind of like, you know, oh, well, that's over, when we know it's not, and it's going to come back around, unfortunately. But I do think that there's been a lot of increased knowledge and just like community building around disasters in general.
Well, I think that's been my last question to you. I think when I first started this show, I think that, you know, my first like statement about what the radio show is going to be about was like about deepening our relationships. You know, I feel like in this time we're in right now, it's like overwhelming, and it's not just the politics, it's like everything. It's just like information overload. Just like generally most people, I think, feel scattered and overwhelmed.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just kind of like, and I feel that too. As and I'm obviously a parent too, and there's all these things going on in my life, but I feel like that's just generally true. And I feel like what I crave, and I do think a lot of other people crave it, is actually like real relationships with real people in real life, you know,
yeah.
And
I know, in real places,
right. And because I think it did match, and I know we have similar journeys in terms of when we got to West County, but for me, there was like, I moved out of a city, which is more transient and, you know, it's great in many ways, to a place that is more grounded and more like the nature and the land are here. And, you know, I feel that rootedness to place and history in a way that I didn't feel as much in the city, even though it was true. But I'm curious, like from your vantage point, you know, as we look ahead over this next few years here in West County, is there anything that you see happening that you want to lift up and be like, this is something that's great that is building community, or something that you isn't there that you wish existed, that's like something that you know,
that's a good question. I mean, I think, you know, on the fire tip, you know, folks know about, there's a new county park happening near Camp Meeker in Occidental. It's going to be called Camp Meeker Community Forest, I think is the name. And it's a long process of actually getting it to being a park, but that piece of land is a big fire risk for both of those towns, because it's a large tract of acreage that's hasn't really been managed or taken care of, rather. And it's exciting. We had some work up there this winter. A crew was doing fire mitigation work and actually having burn piles, you know, that I could smell from my house. So I just want to lift that up. I think the folks who instigated it, it's a coalition of different organizations. I think it's the Sonoma Land Trust is involved, the Camp Meeker Rec and Park, and then I think Occidental and Camp Meeker Fire. I don't know the exact organizations, but it's a lot of people involved working really hard on it.
Well, thank you so much. Again, thanks, Manjula Martin, for being here. Really excited that you joined the show. Hope everybody enjoyed it. Again, this is Remembering Ourselves, and I'm Colin Mutchler. We'll be back. Actually, next week, it will be back. And so thanks again for tuning in. I'm going to go out with a song that you chose as your bonus song for this era, which is Cumbia is the New Punk by Son Rompe Perra.
It's 4 o'clock.
This is KOWS, Occidental, California, 92.5 FM, streaming at kowsfm.com. Thank you for listening to us. We are community radio for the west of Sonoma County, and we always practice free speech and no bull.